The Soul, 7, by Chris Raitt. Read by Jonathan Keeble. For every legion whose fate it was to fight in the great siege, there came the day of the turn, when all other campaigns were suspended and all internal feuds put aside. On that day, on the day of the turn, the road to terror was made clear at last. There were those, such as Dawn's imperial fists, who had never wavered from their task, and whose part in the galactic drama had been written long before they themselves became aware of it. There were others, the scions of the War Master himself, who had never been anywhere but at the forefront, driving the shockwave of assault closer and closer, world by world, towards the prize they coveted with obsessive determination. And finally, there were those whose way had been made crooked, halted by the vague malice of the warp, or driven into blind alleys by the ambition of the damned, and for whom the turn would come late. But every legion, sooner or later, had their day, the dawn of which set their faces heavenward. Then the void drives were kindled. Then the final arming was made. In the dark centuries to come, as the suns cooled and the old weapons rusted, they would look back, those who had survived, and tell one another, "That was when we cast our dice into the maw of eternity. That was when there was no way back for good or ill, and we knew we would not turn aside until the spires of the palace stood before us." For most, the decision was made by their Primarch, if he lived, and the legionaries would fall in behind that command, just as they had been created to do. But there were those whose sire was slain, or driven into madness, or simply absent, taken from them by the eddies of the ether. And for much of the Third Legion, the children of the Emperor, who had once been immaculate, there had been no word from Fulgrim since the hidden betrayal on Idris, and that delayed their turn towards the throne world. They had always been a proud communion of souls. So it was that as the War Master's black gaze began to shift towards what would one day become known as the Great Slaughter at Beta Garmon, two praetors of the Fractured Third were circling the toxic globe of Horvia, their lacquered warships at high orbital anchor. When the Lord Commander Primus Eidolon, called the Soul-Severed by those who both revered and loathed him, first beheld that world from the void, he laughed.
"Has it been made for us by our new gods?" he wondered aloud. "Did they fashion it from nothing to be our glorious tomb?"
His vexillary, the orchestrator Lecus Fodion, gurgled into a swollen vox distorter.
"Slaves," he murmured. "Slaves."
"Yes," said Eidolon, "but not yet.
One obstacle remains."
The bridge of the Proud Heart, many-tiered and magnificent, was burnished with gold and jasper and chrysolite. Lamps burned inside iron cages, throwing writhing shadows across polished stone. Eyeless and earless mortals shuffled from station to station, their spines clunky with implanted pain-bringers, their shaved heads bearing brands of ownership. The deck shook with the endless harmonics of the greater sonic engines below, chained down but never still, imbued with maddened machine spirits and thirsting for deployment. On a giant, pearl-enclosed oculus viewer hung high above the command throne, a swirl and a roil of smoke gusted across the mirror-glass finish, then clarified, exposing the gilt helm of another warrior of the Legion. His armour had been stretched and torn into barbs and swashes, the eye-lenses expanded, the vox-grill distended. The purple and gold of his ceramite had been war-damaged, the flecks of dry blood mingled with the blackened detritus of combat.
"Lord Commander Arcorian," greeted Eidolon,
offering him a perfunctory salute.
"You look quite terrible."
"Oh, that comes of fighting, Lord Commander Eidolon," Arcorian responded,
his deep voice calmer, more soldierly, without the high-born, Camosian flavour that normally infected the speech of the Legion's elect.
"Perhaps fighting is something you might think to try."
Eidolon chuckled.
"I fought last alongside Mortarion. Did you know that? I helped him find something he'd lost, and I liked him, despite everything. It is most invigorating to spend time with a Primarch. I only wish we had one ourselves."
"We have a Primarch."
"And if you ever see him, do pass on my regards."
"We must do as he would wish."
"I know you think so. Time to finish what we started. How exhilarating. And you will lead us there, no doubt?"
"We will lead together until the Phoenician returns. Let us discuss this matter further. The planet below is neutral ground."
"You've seen it. What a truly magnificent hellhole."
"I will send you coordinates."
"Oh, I await them with eagerness."
The Oculus swam back into indeterminate grey clouds of static, and the comlink cut out. Fodian looked at it for some time before he seemed to realise that the exchange was over. He turned sluggishly towards Eidolon, bereft of the combat stims that gave him back his mortal alertness.
"You will meet him, then?"
he asked.
"I will, brother,"
said Eidolon fondly.
"On Horvia, and he will share command?"
"That's what he said."
The orchestrator's jaw worked silently for a moment.
"I don't trust him."
"Really?"
Eidolon hissed.
"Then you must learn to, brother, for we are all of the Legion." "Set the coordinates. I wish to hear what he has to say."
The site chosen was an 8-kilometer-wide plain set in the heart of what had once been a manufactorium the size of a continent. War had come to Horvia long before the Emperor's children had, and the titanic mass of forges, furnaces, and assembly halls had been turned into molten heaps of slag, still burning months after the original desecrators had turned their guns elsewhere. Of the billions of inhabitant workers, some yet remained, shell-shocked and desperate, huddled within the metal carcasses where they had once refined and processed chemicals for the growing Imperium. The machinery they had used was mostly shattered, broken apart during orbital bombardments, ground into the glowing dust by the march of rad-suited troopers. Any manufactoria that had escaped destruction now ran without supervision, pumping lurid chem solutions into boiling pens that churned beneath Horvia's permanent winter. Seas of arsenic hissed against coastlines of corroding metalwork, while burn-off towers still flared like torches. Arcorian's plain was a rare slab of unbroken ground amid the forest of twisted iron and slumped storage cylinders. The earth was black, stained deep by lethal runoff. 16 of Eidolon's heavy-suited warriors stood in the dust, their helm lenses glowing lilac in the preternatural gloom. At their head was the Soul Severer himself, larger than the greatest of his followers, his heavy cloak rippling in the hot wind. His once lustrous hair hung lankly over skin held together with iron-black sutures. In enormous gauntlets, he carried a glinting thunderhammer, and his breastplate was crowned with a grotesque organ grill. His throat seemed to spill out of his gorget, flabby and wet, ripe to swell into the sonic scream that had become his favoured weapon. Those that came with him were of the Cacophony, the brotherhood that had sunk ever deeper into apothecary-inspired decadence, their organs augmented and bloated, spliced and re-spliced, pumped with stims and drained of blood until they were somewhere between legionary and weapon. Their only purpose was to generate nerve-tearing walls of killing sound. Fodion lumbered up alongside his master, his boots sinking deep into the black dust, and looked up at the northern rim of the plain. Like most of his brothers, he did not wear a helm, and his pale nostrils flared as he drank in the bitter air of the chem world.
"Where is he, then?"
he asked, his voice already thickening with the adrenal stimulus of combat drugs. Eidolon hefted his thunderhammer lazily, peering into the drifting murk.
"He's already here. Can you not see him?"
Fodion looked confused, peering up into the ruins, his fingers twitching on the fused controls of his organ gun.
I do not...
His words were lost in a sudden crescendo from the northern border of the plain. Echoing booms rang out like macro cannon shots, rocking the earth beneath their feet. Towers toppled, crumbling into spoil, blown apart from the inside. Searchlights whirled into the sky, followed by tracer flares sent up by mortar teams. 1,000 pinprick lights emerged, helm lenses, gun lamps, the outlines of 3rd Legion tanks, artillery units and armoured walkers. Fodion looked at the forces breaking out into the open and spat on the ground. His organ gun began to tremble, winding up to the volume that would rend flesh and break metal.
So much for trust, he growled.
Eidolon laughed, relaxed, remaining static even as the first bolts whistled past him.
I suppose we're putting that all behind us.
He turned to the south, away from the direction of attack, lifted his thunderhammer high and activated the energy field. The gesture was answered immediately, and Eidolon's own legionaries emerged from concealment, building up to a jogging charge. Land raiders shrugged off their cover and hammered into firing range.
I always hated Arcorion,
Eidolon said, turning back to face the enemy.
This should be amusing.
His summoned forces moved up, making good use of scimitar jet bikes and land speeder transports to close the gap swiftly. Lead units surged on either flank, enveloping the command group and protecting it from encirclement. The serrated crack of bolter volleys cut over the rising roar of engines, throwing warriors to their backs and sending flyers skidding across the broken ground.
So where are you, brother?
Eidolon cried happily over the vox, crashing into the front rank of the enemy and laying about him with the thunderhammer.
You still wish to discuss the Legion command with me?
His hammerhead crunched into one of Arcorion's vanguard, smashing the Space Marine's breastplate apart and hurling the body high into the air. Then Eidolon swept it back, bludgeoning another warrior to the dirt. On either side of him, the cacophony advanced rapidly, opening up with their sonic guns and blasting long corridors through the oncoming infantry. Arcorion's troops kicked back, as well trained and equipped as any of the 3rd Legion had ever been, driving counter-assaults at Eidolon's oncoming surge.
You will not be allowed to usurp the Legion, Eidolon!
Arcorion's voice came over the open channel, seemingly from distance.
Your pride was always excessive, but what you plan now is its own heresy.
Eidolon laughed, driving in the face mask of a reeling legionary before striding into the attack of the next.
So you still cling to that old corpse of hierarchy. You could have knelt at my feet and I would have used you for something. You're a good soldier, Arcorion, just not a good master.
Eidolon was leading his warriors further north, deeper into contact with an enemy that looked the same and fought the same. Though they were taking losses, the speed and precision of their advance was greater. Stormbird squadrons swooped overhead now, unlocking their payloads and setting the skies alight. Contemptor dreadnoughts swaggered into the heart of the fight, flamers roaring and claws rending. Arcorion's forces began to fall back, a disciplined fighting retreat, but a retreat nonetheless.
Fulgrim will return, he voxed, and when he does, he will ask who was faithful. Faithful?
Roared Eidolon, cutting down a staggering champion and driving his cacophony further up the slope.
Faithful! This is what we cast aside. Faith is for the sick, the timid, the ones who cannot endure the pain of transition.
Arcorion's army began to disintegrate. Squads of resilient Phoenix Guard Terminators held the line, while the main body of troops fell back into the cover of the great chem storage tanks. The fighting moved from the open plain and into the narrow gaps between the holding chambers. Tanks trundled through, tracking infantry squads with their bolters, while the sonic guns screamed out, shattering ceramite and blowing apart adamantium columns.
So proud, even now,
said Arcorion, as his troops fell back further, ceding the chem grounds and retreating into the ruined manufactories beyond.
It was always destined to be your destruction. Look around you now, and see the truth of it.
It was only then, leading the charge, that Eidolon spotted the burst charges, clamped to the walls of the chem vats, linked by cables and strung between hundreds of the towering containers. The greater part of his army was now advancing down the dark chasms between them, heedless of the elaborate daisy chain of bomb clusters. Just as Legion doctrine demanded, Arcorian had drawn them into terrain where he had the advantage. There was no time to react. Before Eidolon could issue an order, the charges blew. The chasms disappeared behind a maelstrom of flame, rushing down the channels with a deafening roar. The Kemvats teetered, sagged, then collapsed, spitting luminous toxins across the legionaries in their shadow. Lasbeams scythed through the cataracts, igniting and exploding, sending fresh flames dancing and skipping through the air. That was the signal. Arcorian's forces turned, ending the feigned retreat and pushing back towards the burning chem towers, pouring bolter shells into the raging firestorm. Even as the boiling slurry fizzed, steamed and slapped, they charged towards Eidolon's reeling troops, the light of slaughter back in their eyes.
"Now you see why you could not lead!"
Arcorian finally appeared in person at the head of his army, striding down between the smouldering ruins with a crackling power sword in hand, flanked by Phoenix Terminators and hunting for his fellow Lord Commander. Maniacal screams filled the air, punctuated with the gurgling agony of the flesh scoured. Eidolon met him at the centre of the burning chem zone, surrounded by his bodyguard of cacophony. They were all reeling, bent double, their armour smoking, their exposed flesh red raw. The ground at their feet was churned into seething wells of liquid corrosion. Horvia's distilled foulness had crashed over them in waves, scrubbing the insignia from their armour and leaving what remained melted and distended, a sloughed morass of bubbling gold and lacquer. The Lord Commander Primus's hair had been burned away, and now hung in blackened clumps from a scabby scalp. Arcorian towered over him, his sword edge shaking like heat mirage in the swaying air.
"Rise to face me," he said, "and I will let you die on your feet."
For a moment Eidolon made no move. His cacophony looked as if they were blinded, lost in a world of private agony, their exposed flesh bubbling and their limbs twitching. But then they stirred, drawing up to their full height, a jerking movement of terrible unison, as if some gestalt force impelled them. Eidolon grinned, and the tortured skin around his mouth split wide open. His bodyguards started to laugh, first in scraps, then together, a hideous, unravelling chorus of fervid delight. The chemicals swam across them still, searing and scoring, corroding their way into bloodstreams and reacting with the soup of stimulants already there. Arcorian saw what was happening too late. He raised his blade, his command to attack choked by revulsion. But that was the last movement he ever made. Eidolon opened his throat. Across the entire battlefield, every warrior of the cacophony opened his warped and bloated throat, and the air split apart with a death scream that tore the towers down to their foundations. The dust blew apart, the flames gusted out, armour exploded, shattered by the harmonics that rebounded and amplified across an impossible spectrum. Arcorian was annihilated. His body blasted into flying bloody fragments. Those with him were atomised, scattered as if by a hurricane. Land raiders rocked on their tracks, their machine spirits fired by the deluge. More vats burst apart, spraying fresh fuel onto a growing fire. The cacophony kept on screaming, letting their heads rock back and gulping in more of the toxic rain. Eidolon drank deepest and shrieked loudest, his roar flensing flesh from bone. The poison boiled and churned within him, refined by the horrific chemistry of his altered state, and he felt his muscles begin to swell to even greater dimensions, pulsing like venom sacs filled to bursting. Once all before them had been destroyed, the cacophony began to move again, stalking up through the steaming cadavers, their lusts driven to mania, their appetites ramped up to insatiable levels. Fodian marched with his Lord Commander, crunching over the remains of Arcorian and barely noticing, his weeping eyes glistening with ecstasy.
"I can taste it!"
he cried.
"I can feel it!"
Eidolon grabbed him with both hands, dragging his face close to his own. No icons of the old emperor's children remained on their armour, only nightmarish slurs. The old purple had reacted violently, turning a virulent pink and glowing into the night's inferno. Armour seals had fused closed, vox grills melted into liquid flesh. Everything had dissolved into the flux of delicious agony.
"This is what we do now,"
Eidolon rasped, feeling his vocal cords burning.
"This is what we are now. You wanted slaves? You have them. We will burn them, skin them, render them down and refill these vats. Horvia is the beginning. We will create poisons that the gods themselves will gag on."
And then Fodion was laughing again, screaming again, his lungs alive with the full agony of sensation.
"You are the master of the Legion, Lord,"
he gibbered.
"There is none but you."
Eidolon let him go. His body throbbing, his eyes stinging, he staggered further up the rise, smelling the burned pork stench of flesh beneath the chemical reek. He climbed and climbed, ascending the steaming husk of a once great spire, until he could see the full extent of the destruction wrought by his legion. They were running free now, fueled with the toxins that ought to have killed them, changed by slow mutation into processes of pain. They were siphoning what remained of the drained tanks, guzzling it, feeding it to their captured enemies, mixing it into new combinations. Soon they would spread out across what remained of Horvia, and the cycle would begin again. As he watched them rampage, he knew that their desires could never be fulfilled here. Those that survived would seek out ever greater sensations, ever greater debaucheries. They would have to keep going, on and on, never stopping, lest what they had indulged in should kill them. It would take a world of trillions to hope to satisfy such lusts, a world packed so tight with humanity that even a legion would take a century to harvest them all. And it was then that he knew. It was then, with the clarity of the intoxicated, that he saw what must come next. Eidolon, the soul severed, who had once died and now lived again, understood that all was now accomplished that could be accomplished, and that only one goal remained. The day of the turn had come. He looked up into the stars, already dreaming of the violations his legion would devise.
"And so, to Terra," he murmured, feeling a hot line of acidic drool run down his chin. "As we have done here, so shall we do there, with the War Master's own blessing."
That was The Soul Severed by Chris Raitt, read by Jonathan Keeble.